Hey everyone, this is Josh from the Solopreneur Grind podcast, and I am here with Dan Blanchard. Dan, really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Josh. Thanks for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Excited to get into things. And Dan, can you start by telling us just a little bit about who Dan is and what Dan's been working on lately?
Oh, wow. There's so many cool things. Where do I start? But who Dan is? I guess Dan is just a typical guy that's worked really, really hard, had a lot of ambition, and had dreams of doing some big things. And I've always tried to help people. And I'm a school teacher, former coach, former athlete, and I've gone on to become a best-selling author and award-winning speaker. I've got my own TV show now, university professor. I mean, I just do so many cool things. And my latest book just came out. I write in a couple of different genres. Some of it's like teen leadership stuff. Some of it's academia. Some of it's parenting. And my academia book just came out, How to Be More Successful with Difficult Students. Just came out. I guess I got so many things I'm doing, like a dozen columns I write. But it's all around the same sort of theme, Josh. And what it's around like helping people, especially all young people. Right. And I help our young people. I help our youth. And then I help the people that help them, such as like their parents, their coaches, their teachers, community leaders. You know, it's all right there. And I do a lot of hours. I mean, I do a lot of hours like you, Josh, and like a lot of the people that you associate with. I do a lot of hours to make all this good stuff happen. So
right.
In a nutshell, that's right. Dan Blanchard. Oh, and by the way, I'm also married to 5 kids. And I'm always running my 5 kids all over the place. So as you can imagine, I'm super busy. Have a full-time job, have a couple part-time jobs, you know, and then I do the whole authoring and speaking and TV host and columnist and everything else that I do on the side.
Right, which really blew me away when we had our phone call a few weeks ago just to kind of get to know each other a little bit better. I think I might have asked you on the phone call, when do you sleep, especially with the kids and the family and then all these kind of side projects and passions and everything like that. But let's start a little bit earlier on, Dan. Obviously, I want to get into the details of all that good stuff, but what was it like? What was high school Dan like? What type of person were you back then?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. My boy, that brings back memories. Thinking about high school. I'd say leading up to high school, Josh, I was your boy. I grew up in a very dysfunctional home. Grew up in poverty, grew up in a world of violence. I was raised the first like 7 or 8 years of my life in the north end of Hartford. My family was the only white family.
Wow.
And, you know, it was violent. You know, there was a lot of like reverse racism, you know, always get the honky, beat up the honky, you know, all that stuff. And then I went to East Hartford, and me and my older brother, we just continued to be fighters, street fighters and all that. But, you know, getting into trouble. All those grades weren't that good. Something cool happened, and then I found football. And my brother found it first. He was a little older than me. So found football, started playing football. We were having some fun at it and getting pretty good. And then my brother found wrestling. And then a couple years later, I found wrestling too when I got in high school. And now we're talking about the high school Dan Blanchard. The high school Dan Blanchard's a very unique and complex character. In that I still have, I guess, a lot of the bruises, psychological bruises of growing up the way that I did. You know, when you go through your formative years and you're constantly under stress all the time from living in poverty and being abused and living in just a world of violence inside your house and outside your house, it just does a lot of things to you psychologically. So psychologically, it was kind of weird because I still was bearing some of that burden and those scars. I was still feeling like pretty much everybody I met was like better than me. And and now today it's still there in some ways. Except today I'm a little bit smart about how I go about it. Today I know that everybody's better than me in at least one way and that I can learn something from that, everybody I meet. But I also know today that I'm better than everybody I meet in at least one way so they can learn something from me too. But, you know, the 14, 15-year-old Dan Blanchard didn't know that. And it took a long time for me to figure that out and learn that. And so the high school Dan pretty much thought pretty much everybody was better than him. But the cool thing was that I had another side of that coin. And I wasn't getting good grades. You know, I wasn't doing good. But what I was doing good in was sports. You know, I was doing very good in football. And I was a freshman of my captain of my freshman football team. I made varsity wrestling as a freshman and placed in the States. So, I mean, I was a great athlete. And I got to admit, Josh, some of that came from, like, being angry at the world. You know, but what I did was I funneled that anger, not, let's say, you know, at the world or at my teachers or at my parents or my friends. So I kind of just funneled into, like punishing the weights in the weight room. You know what I'm saying? Running sprints harder than anybody else. You know, like, I used to actually enjoy loving hills. Running hills during football, and suicides in basketball, you know, when I played basketball. And so that's like, you know, I always tell my students today when they sit there and they tell me that they've had a crappy life and that they're angry at the world. And I'm like, good. That's good. You can use that. That's energy. You know, you can funnel that and use that. So for me, like I said, in high school, it was very complex because then I went on to play in a state championship high school football team. Josh, when I ended up winning the Thanksgiving Day Defensive Game Ball Trophy, and I was only like 150 pounds. You know? And then I was a two-time state champ wrestler at the 145-pound weight class and a two-time junior Olympian wrestler.
Jeez.
So for me, I think where my security came from, Josh, was that I knew I could fight. You know, I knew I could fight. I knew I was strong as an ox, could run like the wind. So my security came with physical fitness, physical ability is where my security came from. Unfortunately, I didn't have the other things. You know, like I didn't have the confidence. I didn't have the grades. I didn't have, like, the intelligence, at least not in a way that I was getting good grades. You know, so I was struggling in so many different areas of life. Like, I was afraid to even ask a girl for a date because, you know, I was afraid she'd say no. You know, every once in a while, I kind of got the courage up to ask, but majority of the time, I wouldn't even ask because I was just afraid of, you know, getting rejected by the girls out there. So, but I knew I could wrestle. I knew I could play football. I knew I could lift. I would go on, you know, to lift weights and break the Connecticut bench press record in my weight class, more than doubling my weight. So I could do those things. Now, moving forward, Josh was like, you know, after high school, I knew I had to do something. But the question was like, what? And going to college didn't seem like it was in the cards. A lot of colleges came to me and wanted to recruit me for wrestling. But colleges kind of didn't seem like a thing. So what I did was I went to the Army. And, of course, I had to pick infantry and go right to the front line, you know, pick the hardest one, right?
Yeah.
But it was right up my alley. You know, it was very physical. And it taught me to further increase my discipline, further increase my successful winning habits that I would use the rest of my life, such as getting up earlier than anybody else, and grinding it out. You know, harder than anybody else. I mean, I already knew how to do that in sports, but I didn't really know how to do it in life. So the Army was teaching me how to do it in life, which was a great thing because I still do it today. You know, I get up earlier than everybody else, grind it out harder than anybody else, grind it out longer than, like, the others, and, you know, stay later than everybody else. Or now that I'm a family man, you know, I'm home as much as I can be home, which is actually quite frequently, to have dinner with my family, tuck the kids in the bed, and then, you know, then I'm back on, let's say, the computer grinding it out again, you know, to, like, late night, knowing that I'm getting up at 4 a.m. because that's what I've done every single day for the last decade. So in a way, it's like I'm kind of still in the Army, you know?
Right. It sounds like the Army and sports were great. I mean, for lack of a better way of putting it, just great for you, especially at those formative times.
Well, no doubt.
To, like you said, just be able to put that energy and that anger and frustration towards something productive. And Which is great, because some people aren't able to, right? And it takes them mm-hmm. down different paths.
No doubt.
Was it your decision to join the Army? Did someone suggest it? Were you considering different options and you weighed them and ended up picking that?
Well, interesting thing is, I got recruited by the West Point wrestler coach. And, oh my God, what a great opportunity. And I threw it away because of a couple of things. One, I didn't have any confidence. You know, I was just like, there's no way academically I'm going to be able to handle West Point. So, I mean, why even bother? And then somebody told me that it was 4 years of college and then 4 years of the Army. And I had a girlfriend at the time, and I was like a 17-year-old boy. And to me, I seriously thought, Josh, I know this may seem silly now, but I seriously thought, like, the day after I graduated high school, that like the Army was just gonna take me away for like 8 years. And for 8 years, I would never see my family, never see my girlfriend, never see my friends again. I mean, I didn't know. No one told me, and I didn't ask anybody. And I should have asked somebody, but I didn't. So I was like, it would take me away from 8 years, and you know, this girlfriend that I had at the time, you know, I really liked her, and I couldn't see me leaving her for 8 years on a drop of a dime. And my family and friends. And to me, it was just too scary to go away for 8 years. So I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And besides, I'll never even get in. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't have the grades. I'll never get in that place. And now, all these years later, that I'm an educator and I work with inner city kids all the time, and troubled kids and kids that don't get good grades. And I'm like, listen, you'd be surprised what you can get into with the right attitude and with people vouching for you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's where it started. So maybe, I don't know, it must have been a few months later. I was walking through the school, and we had Army recruiters in our school that were there like almost every day. So one of the Army recruiters walked by me, and he said, hey, what are you doing after high school? And I'm like, I have no idea. And he's like, let's sit down and talk. So the next day we sat down at the library. After school we talked, and you know, he painted a great picture of what the military looked like. And I said to him, I said, hey, you know, this is sounding really good. You know, money for college and all that after. And this sounds great. I said, but perhaps I should do something with, like, technology, electronics, or something like that, because I just feel that that's going to probably be the wave of the future. And right. and he goes, oh, no. He goes, listen, you'll get that stuff in college. Don't worry about it. He goes, you want to be, like, you're pounding down mountains and jumping out of airplanes and helicopters. You want to do infantry. And I, you know, and I was like, yeah. I'm like, that sounds good, you know. So then I went into the infantry. And some of the things that he said I would do, I did do. And it was very exciting. And then some of the things right. he said I would do, I didn't do, you know.
Right. I feel like there's a sales lesson in there somewhere.
Yes, there was a huge sales lesson in there, because some of the benefits that he told me I would get later on, I didn't qualify for. So I was like, oh. So it took me a lot of years to figure out that, you know, for sometimes when I was in the Army, me and the guys would joke that our recruiter lied to us. And it wasn't necessarily that he lied to us. But recruiters are salespeople. Mm-hmm. And that was something we didn't understand, was that they paint the best possible picture. Now, we didn't get some of those things in that best possible picture. I imagine not everybody does. I imagine very few people do get all of the perks of the best possible picture. But there were other perks that he didn't mention that I still use today. You know, like the getting up early. You know, the grinding harder than anybody else for longer than anybody else. And I remember, I mean, just life lessons, you know, be grateful. I remember being grateful. I was never grateful that I had a bed. And when I was sleeping in bricker patches in the Army and on roots and on rocks and in mud and in swamps, all of a sudden when I got back home, I'm like, I'm grateful for my bed. Anytime I have a bed, I'm grateful for it. And I'm grateful that I had a mother that would let me take my time eating my dinner. When I was in the Army, you had about 3 minutes to eat your dinner and you had to eat with both hands. You know? So I was way more grateful for my mother. I was way more grateful for my teachers, especially when in the Army, when you're marching and they're asking you questions, and you get a couple wrong in a row, they put you down in what they call the front leaning rest, which is the push-up position. And then you got to pull your book out of your pocket. And yes, you carry your failed manual in your pocket where it bangs against your leg all day and hits you in the back of the knee all day long. But that's just a little pain you got to put up with. But you're in the push-up position in one hand, and you're digging out your field manual book, and you're searching through that field manual book page by page to try to find the answer. And you're not getting up to answer that question correctly. So for me, I was just like, oh my gosh, I feel so more grateful. I mean, my teachers never did that to me. My teachers were kind, very kind people, but I could not see that at the time. Such as today, when I tell students that you're like in make-believe Disney World right now in the classroom. Your teachers are nice to you. You just can't see it right now because they're asking you to open the book. It's a page 10. They're asking you to take out your pen. Trust me, that's not a big deal. Telling you to take out a piece of paper. Trust me, that is not a big deal. Wait till you're in the front lane of rest looking for answers. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You can't get up until you find those answers. And if you don't get those answers and learn those answers thoroughly, you may die out there in combat. You know what I'm saying? So now you could be grateful for your schools and be grateful for your teachers and coaches. And who cares if your coach yelled at you to do another lap? You know, none of that stuff is anything. You should be grateful to those great people in those schools that have done, that have given their lives to you to help you do better. And I got to tell you, Josh, when I got out of the Army, I ended up going to college, and I started off at Manchester Community College because I didn't have a lot of confidence yet. But now I knew how to work. Like I told you, I always knew how to work in sports. But now I knew how to work in the real world. So now it was just a matter of transferring it to my studies. And I graduated that community college with straight A's. And my first degree, Dean's List, first degree in associate studies, in general studies, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And that just snowballed. I said, if I could do it in a community college, I could probably do it in a regular four-year college. So I went to a four-year college and did it again. And then I went and got a master's, and then a second master's, and then a third master's, and then a fourth master's. And my lowest grade was like an A-. As I'm going through those 14 years of college in 7 degrees that I earned. And you're looking at a kid that was deficient, academically deficient, and had no confidence in high school, you know? Right. And now yeah, I did
7 years, and I felt like that was, you know, a lot, but 14 and 7 degrees. What do you think the difference was, Dan? I mean, obviously you go through the Army, you learn all these things, like, you know, you can't put a value on that, but what is it that's going wrong or that's missing in schools right now that, let's say, for example, high school Dan wasn't able to succeed academically at high school, but was, you know, a few years later?
Well, I don't know. This is going to, this may sound harsh a little bit, but when you get to the Army, you don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. They don't give you a choice to be lazy. They don't give you a choice to fail. There is no failing in the Army. You will succeed at all cost, even if that drill sergeant's got to run you into the ground. Mm-hmm. You will succeed. You will become disciplined. And the teachers that I had never really did that to you back then. And now the teachers' hands are really tight. Teachers can't do anything today. They can't even tell a kid to like to, they practically can't even tell a kid to work harder because you may be hurting that kid's feelings.
Right.
Or something like that. Now, when I played sports, it was different. When I played sports, you know, the coaches would holler and scream at you and be on your behinds the whole time about going harder and doing more. And think about it, I played for a state championship football team. You know, I won the Thanksgiving Day game ball, defensive game ball trophy. My wrestling coach did that. You know, I remember my team put 5 guys in the finals for the state championships. Out of, you know, whatever, how many teams it was. But there was high expectations in sports. Coaches demanded a lot of you. And schools, like, you know, they just kind of like weren't allowed to like do that to you. And today, it's even less able to demand kids to work hard. So that's one component that's missing. The second component that's missing is that, you know, the kids all think that high school is free and they don't value it. And what they don't get is that it's not free. You know what I'm saying? It's a paid education. Their parents are paying taxes for their education. It's being paid for. And kids have got to get out of that mindset that it's a free education. And when you don't pay for something, you don't value it as much. You know what I'm saying? So like I had buddies, their parents bought them cars. I bought my own car. My buddies drove too fast, took chances, and freaking crashed some of their cars. And then their mommy or daddy would buy them another one. Mm-hmm. I never crashed my car because if I crashed my car, I knew I didn't have money to buy another one.
Right.
So I wasn't going to crash it. You know what I'm saying? So somehow we need to do that with education as well, is to get it out of kids' minds when this is free and thus it's not valuable. And in today's kids, I mean, I got to be honest with you, today's kids, the adults in their lives work harder than they do. I remember like when I was a kid, like your parents would tell you to go do something. They wouldn't go do it for you. They tell you to go do something. Or go get a job if you want to buy something. Well, go get a job and earn some money. And then you can buy that with your own money. Today, us parents, we don't even do that. You know, you need something? Okay. You know, we don't even say wait for Christmas. We just, you know, we might say wait for the end of the week and when we get paid and we'll get it for you on Friday. You know, we give kids everything today. I mean, everything is free for them. They don't have to work for anything. So for them, they don't really find value in it. You know, and then the other thing is remember I talked to you about being grateful?
Mm-hmm.
Like the Army made me grateful. And when I came back, I was just like, oh my gosh, I am so grateful for kind educators for supporting me and teaching me how to learn in the real world and maybe someday get a job I could live. So I had a completely different way of looking at the educators. When I came back, I was looking at them out of a, you know, with gratefulness.
Yeah, which is so important. Yeah. I think too, Dan, it comes with age a little bit as well, because I have so much to be grateful for from my childhood. I had a very good upbringing, but it hasn't been until the last 3, 4, 5 years that I've really been able to appreciate it and be as grateful for it as I should, probably not even as grateful for it as I should. But it kind of takes some time to, because when you're a kid, that's all you know, right? You can't really even compare it to anything else. No. And I really connected with your point on sports, because I played a ton of sports competitively growing up as well. And for all the reasons you mentioned and more, it was such a great experience, and I'm happy I did it. You know, you learn how to work hard, teamwork. You get the push that you don't get from teachers 100% and in some other areas. My parents were pretty good at pushing me with school. You know, it was very important, and I'm happy for that. But there's something about, you know, so for example, in football, lining up against someone else who doesn't give a crap about you and is going to do everything they can to try and, you know, run you to the ground, that, you know, it gives you a push and a drive like a teacher never could, even if they wanted to. So I think it's so important, something competitive like sports, maybe if you're, you know, if you're not into athletics, something even other extracurricular, chess, an instrument, you know, stuff like that.
No doubt. Extracurriculars are a must. Josh, and because one, they're voluntary. Two, they're competitive. Three, like I said, you want to be there. They're social. Usually you're there with friends, and you want to do better. I mean, so when you do those things and you learn those skills and you're in that environment and you find out you can do that, you can get better at chess or the play or the video game club or whatever it is, you know, sports, if that's what it is. But whatever it is, once you learn that you can push yourself, once you learn you can work harder, once you can learn that it can be fun, and once you start seeing these improvements and start gaining these habits of success, like showing up every day, you would dare miss a practice for the theater or whatever it is. You know, those are success habits. So once you start figuring this stuff out, then you can apply that to other areas of your life. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I've done with first sports, second the Army, then third college. And then fourth, for me, it was being a parent. You know, I applied all that stuff to being an educator and being a parent. You know, I guess a grown-up adult.
And I would add five to that is being an entrepreneur, right? I don't know if that comes before or five. Before
number that, or after. For me, Josh, that was actually after. And that's funny. Oh, wow. We're on the same wavelength because that's exactly what I was going to say next is that for me, as I was having children, like five of them, I mean, I was the president of a Toastmasters club. So I was already doing like public speaking and I was like, I was already teaching. I was already coaching football, coaching wrestling, but my students kept asking me to write a book so that I could tell other people, other kids, the sort of things I'm telling them. And I said, no, for like 10 years. I'm like, I'm a terrible writer. So no, plus nobody would buy my book. Right. So
why were they asking you, or maybe another way to ask that is, what type of stuff were you telling them that they wanted you to put in a book?
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, I've never heard of students ask a teacher to write a book, especially.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I had a great topic. I taught history. So when I was talking about Rosa Parks sitting in the bus, I would talk to the kids about courage. I'm like, would you have stayed on that bus? And I'm like, I don't know if I would have. I had, like, you know, kids to feed. I can't get arrested. Right. Lose my job. I'm like, well, would you do it? So as I'm going through it and I'm teaching history, I'm teaching other lessons on courage and perseverance, inspiration, you know, and doing the extra work, you know, staying up late. You know, Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and the organization that they were working with, you know, they didn't go to bed early. They stayed all-nighters sometimes making plans for what they were going to do. And this is there. That those stories unfold. Story after story after story in their books, in their history classes, that's how it goes. So my students used to always tell me, like, all the time, like, oh my God, you're the most inspirational teacher I've ever had. And I do. I fire them up. I get them emotionally involved in the class. And we have great classes. And I dare them to dream, you know, about what they're going to do in the future to make the history books, you know, what they're going to do to make this world a better place.
Even if it sounds like you were, you were kind of filling in the holes that you had as going through as a student, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And providing those other pushes and motivations and things that we, like we just said, we need that from teachers and schools. We're just not getting it the way it is right now.
No.
So when did you reach the tipping point? I mean, obviously we know the ending that you did ultimately give in because you've written multiple books. So what happened then?
Well, this went on for about 10 years, with different students, you know, different years. And as the decade was wearing on, it was becoming more and more frequent. You know, it was almost like once a month, a kid would tell me I should write a book to tell other kids the things I tell them. And I'm driving home one day and a buddy of mine, Dave, calls from Florida. I live in Connecticut. And Dave is the kind of guy that everything he touches turns to gold. So he tells me he's going to write a book. And I'm like, of course. You know, guys like Dave write books. You know. So we're talking a little bit. And I said, yeah, a student of mine told me just today that I should write a book too. And Dave goes, you should. And I was like, wow. I'm like, he's not a student. He's an adult. And so now an adult is telling me I should write a book, and not just any adult, but an adult that's very successful is telling me that I should write a book. So the rest of the drive home, I'm sitting there thinking about all those kids. And something popped in my head, Josh. I go, maybe they're seeing something that I'm not seeing. And perhaps I should put my trust in them the way I've been asking them to put their trust in me. So I made up my mind right then and there that I would write a book. And it would probably just sit on my computer. And when a kid tells me I should write a book, I'll probably just give it to them. You know, I'll print it off the computer, just give it to them. If it helps one kid, I've done good. And if it could be like an intellectual exercise, and if I help one kid, I've done good.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my original plan. So I got home, set my alarm clock for 4 a.m. the next morning. I was already getting up at 5 to go to the gym. So I was like, well, is it crazy to set my alarm clock for 4? And I'm like, well, if you want to do something different, you got to think different, right? So I'm going to set my alarm clock for 4. And I did that for, you know, the 365 days in a row. And the following year, I was holding a book in my hand going, holy crap, it worked. And then I said, well, why stop? And I just kept doing it, Josh. And the next thing I know, I've got about 7-ish, whatever it is, 7 to 8 books out there. I got about 7 or 8 more on my computer that I'll be putting out over the next 5 years. I'm a columnist, international columnist, like a dozen columns. You know, I'm speaking all over the place. I've been on over 100 TV shows, radio shows, several of the world's top 10 podcasts. Oh, and somewhere in there, I kind of didn't throw this in, but somewhere in there back a while ago, I also do a little thing with the Air Force, Air Force National Guard. So I'm a double veteran, got 5 kids, and it's like a decade later, I'm still getting up at 4 a.m. every single day, been offered my own TV show. So I have a weekly TV show that I co-host, and I still get up at 4 a.m., and I don't ever see that stopping. You know, I'm grinding away. I'm doing that old solopreneur thing of grinding every single day. But I've become really successful from it. And I don't know anybody else out there that works as hard as me. You know, and I could trace it right back. I trace it back, the whole entrepreneur thing. I trace it right back. Something I didn't tell you about was that when I was in middle school, pretty much all through the 80s, in middle school and high school, I had a newspaper wrote before school. So 7 days a week, I was up early delivering newspapers in rain and snow, making money before school started. You know, and like I said, then it was sports. I was up early running and lifting weights, you know, right after the newspaper route. So for me, and it was the Army. And saying that it was college. I was up early before going to work, doing my college work and doing it late at night. So when I finally fell into writing my first book, Josh, it became easy for me to just go right down that road of being an entrepreneur and becoming a professional author, professional speaker, you know, online marketer, you know, the whole social media thing that goes with that. Mm-hmm. To me, it was just another step in a direction that I was already going, you know, from my upbringing.
Trying to think of right now how I'm even going to describe this, how I'm going to describe you in the podcast description because of that long list of accomplishments and titles and everything like that. And I love what you said, Dan, about how if you wanted to get make a really big accomplishment or a change, you have to think differently, right? And what I've noticed, and act differently, which is why you set the alarm clock back and kind of changed your mentality of, you know, well, I don't have the confidence to write a book, to, well, if I can just help one kid, it will be worth it. And what I've really noticed, this will be the 34th episode of interviewing successful solopreneurs and entrepreneurs in general, is I haven't interviewed a lazy one yet. You know what I mean? If you want to build something and do something great, you better be ready to put in the time, as you know more than almost anyone, it sounds like. Otherwise, you know, you can't hope a result into happening, right?
No doubt. And I mean, for a while, I was working in Connecticut here. I was working on a board and doing these this show generating winners, and it was helping parents, because we were like, okay, we need parenting, more parenting, better parenting here in Connecticut and across the country, across the world. And I was working with the Connecticut president, Colleen Ferrari, of the Small Business Administration. And when I was working with her, she works with small business owners. So pretty much everybody there works like 60, 70, 80 hour weeks. When you're a small business person, that's just how it goes. And when I was talking to her, she was like, Dan, I don't know anybody that works harder than you. She's like, you're the hardest person, working person I know. And in my eyes, I'm like, that means a lot. Coming from where she comes from, because she sees people works hard every day. So I totally agree with you. And it kind of reminds me of a story of working hard, if I can indulge in this just for a moment, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my students about this story also. You know, there's a woman, she goes to a cocktail party and she listens to this guy who just plays the piano beautifully, more beautiful than anything she's ever heard in her life. So when it's over, she goes up to him and she says, oh my God, I would do anything to play that piano like you. And the piano guy says, listen, I don't know you. I'm not trying to be mean to you. Please don't take this the wrong way. But oh no, you wouldn't. Or you would already be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, says no, you won't. So here's the thing. You can't just say that you want to be successful. I'm saying if you really, really want to be successful, then you gotta work for it. You gotta put the whole effort thing in, you know, which is like the mindset. You gotta have the effort mindset. And when you have the effort mindset, things happen. And that thing, good things happen. I mean, when I look where I am right now, and I couldn't imagine being here 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. I couldn't imagine being here. But I always knew that I would be somewhere, mm-hmm. because I knew that I was going to work hard, and that I wasn't going to quit, and that I was going to keep working hard, and that I wasn't going to look for handouts, and I was going to grind through it just like I did in all those wrestling practices, football practices. I was going to show up every single day just like I did on my paper route. Couldn't just not show up, not deliver papers. You know what I'm saying? So, and then in college, when I learned that college wasn't about being smart, college was about effort.
Mm-hmm.
You put the effort in, and you read all the pages, and you annotate, and you go back and you think about it. And if you do all the work and extra work, then you get A's in college, even though you think you probably, you know, that you're a C student.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to, let's say, intelligence. But you can get A's if you do the work. So, and I was like, well, it worked in sports, and now it works in college. You know what I'm saying? So all these things, to me, it just came down to effort. If you just put the effort in and never surrender and just keep going. I mean, I'm not quite sure yet where I'm going to be in 5 years from now, Josh. But I know that it's going to be a really cool place, even better than where I'm at right now. And right now I'm in a pretty cool place because I got people come to me on a regular basis. People come to me and say, oh my gosh, Dan Blanchard, how would you like to be involved in this? How would you like to be involved in that? And, you know, before I couldn't even get people, you know, go back 5, 10 years ago, I couldn't even get people to return emails.
Right.
Because they were like, who the hell is this Dan Blanchard guy? Nobody knows who he is. So I couldn't even get people to return emails. You know, now I got people asking me all the time to be involved in their projects. And now I'm almost at the point where I got to be like, you know, I try to do everything I can to help people, but sometimes I got to be selective because there's only 24 hours in a day.
For sure.
Yeah. And I got 5 kids. So.
mix that in on top. Yeah. Dan, it's been really great. And we've been focusing a lot on the journey and the motivation and the effort and stuff like that, which is so, so important because that just builds everything else. But I wanted to just cover, because I want to be cognizant of your time here, a few more things on the practical side, especially around the entrepreneurship stuff. So the books specifically is kind of where you dipped your foot in. How did you, when you finished writing the book, which I could imagine is as hard as almost anything, how did you start promoting it? Like what were your first steps? Did you self-publish? How did you start spreading the word? And then how has it been with the subsequent books?
I initially went through a traditional publisher, and I wasn't going to do that. I was just going to like print it on my computer. Mm-hmm. But then I thought about, you know, if I don't take a swing at the fences, mm-hmm. at least once, what are my students going to think? Because I'm always telling them to swing for the fences. So I swung for the fences and I got picked up by a traditional publisher. And then the next thing I did was that I joined an association of Connecticut authors and publishers. And I started going to their meetings, and that's where my learning curve began. And it's kind of funny, Josh, it was almost like college. Like you get out of college and then you think your phone's going to start ringing for jobs, and it doesn't.
Yeah.
So you write a book. And then you think that your phone's going to start ringing for sales, and it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so then you get around people and they say, congratulations, you wrote a book. You're now 10% done. And you think they're joking, but the thing is they're not. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And in the beginning, you actually think it's a little unfair. You say, well, wait a minute. I wrote the book. Now it took like, let's say 2 years to write a book. So now you're telling me I got to learn marketing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to start learning marketing. And then on top of it, I started finding out that the regular traditional publishers really don't give you any benefits to belonging to them, but you're actually better off self-publishing. So now I also not only got to like write my next book, but I have to learn publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, when am I going to squeeze this in? And then I got to learn marketing. And I'm like, well, how am I going to squeeze that in?
Mm-hmm.
And you really feel like it's unfair and that it's too hard and that you're overwhelmed. But what you do learn, Josh, is that you learn that it's a marathon, not a sprint. You just got to do one tiny thing every day. And the years go by, and they go by fast. And then when the years go by, you see that you've traveled far. You know, and you see that you got over 30,000 social media followers. You see you got multiple books. You see that you kind of understand marketing now. You understand publishing now. And they were right. Self-publishing, you got way more flexibility. And you can do so many more things. And then all of a sudden, you're being invited to things. You're being invited to be on people's shows. So now the marketing, at least the exposure part of marketing, begins getting easier. You know what I'm saying?
For sure. And what was that? So you said you were doing one little thing, and over time you're making sure to do it every day, and over time it leads to big results. What would you say that thing was for you when it came to marketing your book?
Yeah, and sometimes that one little thing could be like an email to somebody. And trust me, I've sent out more cold emails than I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes that one little thing is just an email. Sometimes that one little thing is a post on Facebook, you know, or Twitter, or one social media channel. Sometimes that one little thing is to write a blog.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that one little thing is to create a YouTube video. You know what I'm saying? But
right.
You got to start off small. So maybe in the beginning, that one little thing is an email. Anybody can email one person a day. You know, anybody can do like, let's say, one post on a social media channel a day. Even if it's you just holding up your book, that's the picture, and mm-hmm. then you give one bit of wisdom from the book. You know what I'm saying? And there it is.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Anybody can, you know, maybe your one thing today is that you're giving a speech.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's so many one things a day. And then once you get pretty good at that, you find yourself doing 2, 3, 10 things a day.
Right. Yeah. Do you have any tips in terms of, I mean, we've talked about how you do a lot of stuff, not to mention being a father of five. How do you manage your days besides, other than the obviously working extremely hard? Are you like, how do you manage your day? Do you keep a to-do list?
Yeah.
How, like, what does it look like when you wake up at four to write? Phone off? Are you zoned in for long chunks of time?
Well, the beautiful thing about getting up at four is that your kids are sleeping and the world is sleeping. So you're not being interrupted. So you can read and you can write and you can send emails and you can market and you can do all that stuff. And you keep a to-do list and you just try to go on that to-do list and make sure you get at least some of it done every day. You try to prioritize. You try to touch things once. You know, I'm often late to things. My wife will be in the car beeping the horn because I'm trying to get one more email out. And then I jump in the car and I'm driving down the road to bring my kids to their soccer game. You know what I'm saying? So you touch everything once. Me, I eat lunch at my desk. They're grading papers. They're doing lesson plans. So I don't have to bring that home. So when I get home, I'm onto the business side. You know what I'm saying? I'm not bringing home extra papers from school to grade. So I'm not, I'm trying to do, and I work efficient. And I don't spend a lot of time socializing with people. And I don't spend time surfing social media channels. I'm pretty much posting and getting off or reaching out to somebody and then getting off. So my whole day is just boom, 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 boom. I don't waste time. I don't waste time. I'm very, very efficient.
It sounds like if you could sum that answer up in one word, it's efficiently, which you have to in order to get all of your stuff in. No Dan, this has been really great, and I know we have a hard stop soon, and I wanted to ask two more things of you really quick. One is, if there's someone out there who's feeling lost or not sure where to turn, or you know, that low level of confidence that we talked about earlier, or maybe they are thinking about, you know, entrepreneurship routes or writing books or just not sure what to do in general, what would be one or two pieces of advice you'd have for them?
Well, one, I've been there. Okay. I've been there. So reach out to me. I will respond. You know, if you email me or if you send something to me on social media, you know, if you go to my website at danblanchard.net. or granddaddysecrets.com. I've been there. I know what you're going through. I've traveled a great distance from that part of my life. And it still surfaces its head once in a while with me, so I get it. Mm-hmm. So definitely reach out to me and let's establish a relationship. And I'll be there for you to encourage you and be your root you on and get you moving in the right direction.
That's amazing and segues perfectly into my last question, which is, where can people find you, whether it be to get in touch or keep track of you, find your book, everything, or find your books and everything like that?
Yeah, okay, so danblanchard.net or granddaddysecrets.com is my website. I'm all over social media, Facebook, Daniel Blanchard. You'll see me everywhere, all of them, Amazon. I write under a couple different genres. So if you're looking for leadership, Dan Blanchard, The Storm is a great book. If you're looking for like the academic world, Daniel Blanchard. My book that just came out, How to Be More Successful with Difficult Students. If you're an educator, it'd be a great book for you. You know, but I've got other academic books there. So, or just Google. Just Google Dan Blanchard, you know, author, speaker, whatever. You're seeing me all over the place. And if you want to watch me on co-host Mandalia TV. So if you want to watch me there, go for it. I got a YouTube channel. It's got some awesome stuff on it. Check me out there. I'm everywhere. Just reach out to me. You'll find me.
Awesome. And we'll provide links to all those in the description. Dan, really appreciate you sharing your time and your story and your journey with us. And I'm looking forward to hearing the next steps.
Cool, Josh. I had a great time here on your show. Thanks for having me on it.
My pleasure. Hey everyone, Josh here, checking in just one last time. Wanted to say thanks so much for listening to the podcast episode. I hope you got a ton of value out of it. And if you want to keep getting more of the Solopreneur Grind content, make sure to join the email list. What I do is send 3 emails a week with additional content, such as what's going on in the background of my solopreneur journey, insights I'm having on business, and updates when new podcast episodes like these come out as well. It's free. It always will be. The link to join is in the description of whatever podcast platform you're listening this to on. Really hope to have you on the list and continuing to share these awesome solopreneur journeys and insights with you as well. Have a great day and hope to see you soon.